This is an iHeart podcast.
The shutdown is coming to an end. Why did we have one? Why did it end? We'll talk about that. We're going to wish a happy birthday to the United States Marines, all these economic proposals, all that and more coming up on Umright. Okay, so the government shutdown is wrapping up. No, it is not wrapped up yet, but it is wrapping up. Let me just explain before we get into the whys of everything. All right, the Senate's good to go, but the House isn't actually convened right now. Long story short, it's going to take 2 or 3 days for the shutdown to officially end. Now, maybe the shutdown affected your life deeply. Maybe it didn't affect your life at all. I know that they've been canceling 1,500 flights across the country. Maybe you're in the military, TSA. Maybe it affected you. Chances are, unless one of those things applied to you, travel, TSA types of things, chances are it didn't really have a huge effect on your life, but it did affect a lot of people. Now, why was there ever one to begin with? Because it's kind of odd if you're going to just wash your hands of everything and take a 30,000-foot view. Why would you do this? Why would Democrats not just vote for a CR, which they always vote for? Republicans always vote for it. Democrats always vote for it, which sucks, by the way. But this time, why do something different? Well, it's important, before we get to their language on the thing, it's important to understand this concept that we've talked about before over and over and over and over and over again. I love to use Dr. Frankenstein's monster as an example because it is the perfect example for what has happened. Democrat elites, Democrat politicians, people in the media, they understand that the motivation level of their base is really important for them. That's what gets you people marching in the streets. That's what gets people writing checks to your campaign, knocking on doors. You need the Democrat base motivated. And to motivate the Democrat base, you have to give them something to rage against. Rage, never really something for, but always against. There always has to be some big devil that you're fighting against. And for 10 years, that has been Donald Trump. Endless media stories of Donald Trump this, Donald Trump that, Nazi Hitler, Nazi Hitler, Nazi Hitler, Nazi Hitler. And Democrats across the country at every level, local level, national level, have been able to run against Donald Trump to motivate their base. Nothing motivates Democrats like Donald Trump. Hey, some guy will be running for constable. Vote for me and I'll stop Trump. Well, it works. Motivates the Democrat base. But, like all things, there can be a negative to that positive. After 10 years of programming, and the Democrat base is extremely programmable, that's why they're communists, they're herd animals. After 10 years of that, what has happened is the average Democrat, I'm not just talking about activists or crazy ones, the average Democrat is insane. Deluded? I don't know what insulting word you want to put on it. I'm not even trying to insult them. They are so brainwashed now with 10 years of Trump is Hitler propaganda. They are so brainwashed that now, well, Dr. Frankenstein, the elites, created this monster. Now the monster can't be controlled. Now it's not necessarily the elites calling the shots anymore. Now the monster, the Democrat base, they have demands. And their demand is you stop Trump. Why aren't you stopping Trump? You have to stop Trump. Stop Trump. Stop Trump. They have demands. And you can yell at them now too. You're blue in the face if you're a Democrat that these demands are wrong or bad for the country or unrealistic. They don't want to hear that now. 10 years of programming, they want Donald Trump stopped. And so Democrats in Congress, in the House and Senate, they felt enormous pressure from their base to deliver some kind of a win. Give me a win. But it's very difficult to have a win in Congress, even when you have the majority. unless you have a supermajority, even then it can be difficult. How do you get your legislation passed? It's hard to get the votes. When you have a minority, it's pretty much impossible. So what to do? What to do? Well, the only leverage you have is shutting down the entire United States of America, the government anyway. This is why they all talked about leverage.
We need to do this while we have the leverage.
Of course, there will be, you know, families that are going to suffer. But it is one of the few leverage times we have.
You reopen the government and we lose our leverage, there has to be an agreement right now. That's what this whole shutdown is about.
Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House. Frankly, this is our only moment of leverage.
The idea that you would give up all of your leverage and then hopefully get some sort of great deal coming down the pike is just a fool's errand.
Why are working families the leverage the Democrats need to get Obamacare fixed?
It's the only lever we have.
Democrats have this one little sliver right now when we've got some leverage here.
Some Republican senators have pushed a bill that would pay government workers.
I think that just gives the president more leverage.
Leverage. What leverage did they have? Well, because they didn't have any leverage to pass actual legislation, well, we'll shut the whole thing down. We'll just make it so nothing happens at all. But it's a very dangerous game. You know what playing chicken is? There are various ways you can play it. One of the most common ways, you see it in the movies maybe now and then, is you get in a car, the other guy gets in a car, and you drive right towards each other. Very stupid. Please don't do this. And the idea is you want to see who swerves first, who turns first. But the problem with chicken is you're banking on the other side giving in at some point in time. If they don't, you either have to crash or you have to turn. It's a very, very dangerous game, this chicken. Democrats decided to play chicken with Republicans and try to hold them hostage to get something. And by the way, they talk about health care, tax credits. That's not important. What they wanted was to go to their monster and say, hey, guys, look, we got you something. We're fighting. We got you something. That's what they wanted. And the leadership in the Democrat Party, they're feeling the pressure because of this monster. That's why Chuck Schumer faked outrage today.
I must vote no. This health care crisis is so severe, so urgent, so devastating for families back home that I cannot in good faith support this CR that fails to address the health care crisis. The American people know who is inflicting this healthcare trauma on them, Donald Trump and the Republicans. Healthcare costs made a major impact on the 2025 election, and they will certainly have an even greater impact on the 2026 election.
I think Chuck Schumer, his days are over. If he cannot keep his caucus together, he needs to go.
You can tell how passionate he is about this, as he, with his reading glasses on, and this is an outrage about the health care and the, hang on, let me switch to my, Chuck Schumer knows that he has to show his base that he's outraged. He's really mad, and he doesn't have to do this for any other reason than his own power. And the fact is that Democrats, and it wasn't even Schumer, that Democrats cross the aisle and reopen the government means Chuck Schumer may very well be in trouble. They're already calling for his head.
You think Chuck Schumer needs to go after tonight?
He should have gone a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. Yes. Yes. You talk about aim and not meeting the moment, right? Every time he gets in front of a camera, the average Democratic voter out there screams, be done with you. Be done. And this will only accelerate that.
Leadership, Dr. Frankenstein, can't control this monster anymore. And look, there are so many people in the far, far left-wing fringe of Democrat politics. They understand perfectly well what the base wants. And they make it even harder for Democrat leadership to do anything remotely reasonable. Did you hear Bernie Sanders?
Studies show that will mean that some 50,000 Americans will die every year unnecessarily. And all of that was done to give $1 trillion in tax breaks to the 1%. As everybody knows, just on Tuesday, we had an election all over this country. And what the election showed is that the American people want us to stand up to Trumpism, to his war against working class people, to his authoritarianism. That is what the American people wanted. But tonight, that is not what happened.
Bernie Sanders knows. He knows full well the Democrat base. This, the average Democrat voter, probably the Democrat in your life, if you have one, a family member, a co-worker, this is how they feel. There is nothing else but stopping Trump. If you have to burn down the United States of America, cancel every single flight, stop pay for the military, even though they may be uncomfortable with the idea of those things, that doesn't matter at all. The top goal has to be stopping Trump. And of course, look, again, these are programmed herd animals. That's what Democrats are. They don't know why. If you ask them, I love doing this whenever I encounter Democrats out in the wild. I love just asking very calmly, not argumentative, probing questions about why. Oh, you got to stop Trump. From what? Why? What is it? You'll get this blind rage. Sometimes these vague things. Oftentimes things that aren't even real. Almost all the time, things that aren't even real. Not necessarily knowledgeable at all, but programmed over and over and over and over and over again. But that monster is so incredibly powerful. Now, this is wonderful news for people like you and people like me. We get to sit back and watch the carnage. But let's be frank. This is really bad for the country. It's really a bad thing for the United States of America that one of the two political parties completely sucks and the other one is a suicide pact trying to burn the nation down. This is an uncomfortable place to be, but we'll get through it. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk about this and much more with Chloe in a moment. Before we talk to Chloe, I want to talk to you about sleeping. Yesterday was Sunday. And look, Sunday was a busy day, a lot of caffeine, and already you start thinking, Sunday night, you start thinking about work, don't you? Oh man, got a work week coming up, school, got all kinds of things. I need a good night's sleep tonight. Start off on the right foot. That's what Dream Powder is here for. You need a bag of it in your house at all times. It's just this bag. I have the cinnamon chocolate. It's hot chocolate, but this is special hot chocolate. It's hot chocolate that puts you to sleep. Not with drugs. Natural things inside of Dream Powder will have you sip on a cup of hot chocolate. Half hour later, it's kind of tired. You drift off to sleep. Want a nice fat discount? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
You have to go back to what the strategy was at the beginning of the shutdown. There were two goals, both of which I support. One was standing up to Donald Trump. The other was getting some resolution on the ACA premium tax credit issue. The problem was the shutdown wasn't accomplishing either goals, and there was practically, well, there was zero likelihood that it was going to. In terms of standing up to Donald Trump, the shutdown actually gave him more power.
Do you wish that you would have started looking for this off-ramp sooner? Mm. You said that Republicans were never going to change in their position.
I didn't fully understand how dug in they were, again, because I was so focused on the Virginia elections. I wasn't in this discussion on the health care to see how dug in they were.
Okay. Joining me now, Chloe Trapinato, host of the Chloe Trapinato Show. Chloe, okay, so what was this? Simply a gamble that the low T GOP would grab its ankles like they always do, and they just didn't? Is that what it was?
I think it was a sanctimonious facade. It didn't take them any time at all, and the masks are off. Every single Democrat we know and love so dearly that comes on our television screens every day is now saying the exact same thing. Our number one priority was to stop Orange Bad Man. We really didn't care that we were making 42 million Americans suffer. We didn't care that we were hurting military families. We didn't care at all that you were going to miss your Thanksgiving dinner because you couldn't go fly to see your aunt. We just needed to beat Donald Trump. How are they so publicly admitting all of this just mere moments after the shutdown has ended? 40 days and all they have to claim is that they tried their best. They tried to stop Trump. They didn't end up getting anything in return. And all they did was hurt the American people. I think it's quite rude.
Yeah, rude is actually a perfect way to put that. I talked in the open about this Dr. Frankenstein situation, at least it appears to me we have, where Democrats have programmed their herd-based animals for so long to believe that Trump is the end of all fear, the sum of all fears, that now that even if it hurts the country, even if it burns down the country, you have to at least appear to be fighting him or you're not going to stay in office.
Exactly. That is all they have. And whenever Trump leaves office, I have no idea what their claim is going to be. I don't know what they're going to do. Well, next they're going to try to say that J.D. Vance is Hitler, and they're going to try to make him up just as bad as Orange Bad Man. He'll be Bad Couch Man. But that's all they have right now. But I guess there is one good thing that came out of this. Americans are paying attention to civics. We're learning a little bit more about our government every time Democrats do stupid things like this. We learn that there is a filibuster and there's a threshold. And just because they're spouting off that Republicans are in control of everything and it's all Trump's fault that you're not getting your SNAP benefits, Americans did a little bit more digging. They did a little research and they started discovering some things about our government that they might not have known before, that, hey, just because Republicans have a majority in the Senate, the House, and the presidency, that doesn't mean they can just do whatever they want. Our founding fathers made it so that the party in power could not just do whatever they want. They need to work with the other side of the aisle, the Democrats, to get major bills and legislations passed through. And unfortunately, it took 40 days for five more sane Democrats to work with Republicans and come over to the side of common sense. And Americans are seeing that, wow, the people that we elect actually do need to work together. They do need to have some sort of common sense and some sort of morality to get things done in this government. And so hopefully that shed a light on who these people are, what they are actually electing them to do. And then Americans might think to themselves the next time there's a vote, an election, okay, well, let's maybe get somebody in here, somebody else like John Fetterman. Maybe let's return to the moderates. Let's elect more people like that that can actually pass legislation, get things done, and not just throw temper tantrums and lead the American people suffering for months on end.
Chloe, part of the problem is, as you well know, is that you don't control the Democrat Party, neither do I, even all the normies out there. It's Democrats who control the Democrat Party, and they don't want John Fetterman. I mean, Josh Shapiro can't even entertain running for president because he's a Jew. Chuck Schumer is already facing calls to get not kicked out of leadership or to get kicked out of leadership. The Democrat base is not crying for moderation or reasonable or anything good for the country. None of these calls are coming from the Democrat Party. How do we deal with that?
How do we deal with the Mamdanis of the world? That's a great question, Jesse. I was reading Denise D'Souza's book this weekend. I just started it, The United States of Socialism. And I think what we do is we start to have young people, my generation especially, start to read, start to do a little bit more primary research, and read books like this that very articulately lay out the history of socialism and how we got to where we are today. And maybe that won't happen. Maybe it's going to take the younger generation many more years to come to common sense and realize that socialism is not the way to go. So until then, I think the Republicans just need to do a really good job of painting a very clear picture of exactly who they are and what they stand for. We need to tell our kids, our students, our friends exactly what it is socialism is, exactly what communism is. We need to have the facts on our side so that we can lay out who the enemy is and how to defeat them with words, with debate. Because until then, Democrats are just going to continue to spread this false messaging and promulgate these same poisonous ideas on TikTok throughout all of the different algorithms, that really socialism is fine, that people like Mom Donnie are normal, that radicalism is totally cool, it's hip. I mean, there's girls on TikTok that are saying, after Mom Donnie won, democracy is hot. You know, they're throwing out everything they can. They're going to say they will make everything free. Socialists will make everything free. Obviously, the economy is not in the best place right now, so it's working. So I think Republicans are just going to have to get past that messaging, win the messaging war on different platforms like social media. We're going to have to do more of this new media stuff and just try to best articulate to Americans that that's not the way to go. Again, read 1984 by George Orwell. I'm telling all of my TikTok fans and Instagram audiences that we just have to be armed with verbal weaponry to win, because that is how we're going to get past people like Zohran Mamdani. Plus, they will see over time that Zohran Mamdani is horrible for New York, and socialists overall would be horrible in any form of leadership, because it just doesn't work here in America. We are a capitalist constitutional republic. The reason that millions and millions of immigrants are trying to get to America every single day is because we are a capitalist society where the American dream can happen, where we can prosper. And I think the more we let socialism pervade, the more that people won't want to come here. And they will, because they're seeing that socialism does not equal prosperity. So I think over time, the pendulum will swing back, but it's just going to take a lot of communication, a lot of clear messaging, and prayers. Because Mamdani will ruin New York City.
Yeah, I think prayers are most definitely the order of the day. How much hope should I, as a cynical, crusty old guy with gray in my beard, how much faith should I put in people realizing that communism, socialism fails when you have cities like Chicago? They'll even go kick their mayor out and then go find a bigger scumbag and install them as mayor. The lesson across the country has not been Democrat voters learning the lesson that Democrat policies suck. In fact, I haven't seen much of that at all.
I think you're right. I'm also cynical, trying to be positive on this lovely Monday, but it's hard in the wake of everything that's going on. I just saw a video of a Chicago person murdered on the side of the street, and cars were just driving past. No care in the world. Oh, dead body. That's normal there in Chicago because the leadership is so abhorrent. To look at things glass half empty, 49% to 60% of Gen Z and young people see socialism quite favorably. So it's actually probably not going to get much better before it gets much, much worse. Obviously, Gen Z has a lot of learning to do before they start to change their tune. So the youngest generation of voters, they love socialism. They love communism. Why is that? Because they're not reading. They're getting spread very poisonous messaging through TikTok via China. And so, yep, to feed into your cynicalness, I do think it's going to get worse. But that's why people like me exist. I'm commonsensical, I'd like to think. I was raised conservative. I was raised Catholic with good parents. And so I'm going to do the best job that I can to spread to my audiences that communism, socialism, it's not the way forward. We need to return to our capitalist values. We need to love this country once again. We need to understand why it's good to go to church, why capitalism works, why our founders were geniuses who made America the way it's supposed to be. They did not foresee a man like Mamdani coming into the picture and ruining everything. So just, I think, explaining to young people why we did things the way that we did, and try to, I don't know, reroute their minds to head back to that reality.
Deprogramming, if you will. Chloe, thank you. I appreciate it. Democrats have a jihadi problem, a big one. Dustin Gregg out of Minnesota is going to come talk to us about it in a moment. Before we talk to Dustin, I want to talk to you about your testosterone levels. No, believe me, I'm not running a low-T clinic or something like that. But there is a reason there's a low-T clinic on every corner in your town. We've lost 50% of our testosterone in 50 years. The reason you're tired all the time, the reason you're always in a bad mood, you've been drinking estrogen. It's in our waters. We shower in it. It's terrible. How do we reverse it, though, when we don't want to take drugs? I don't want a needle in my arm. That's where Chalk comes in. A male vitality stack from Chalk. You're going to have your T levels through the roof with natural herbal supplements. I am not just someone who speaks about Chalk on the television. I have been taking one for 4 years now. I will never stop. The difference it has made in my energy and my mind. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV and get a subscription. You are 3 months away from knowing exactly what I'm talking about. chuck.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Assalamu alaikum. Habin wal aksan. Maaga yega wa yarub farid. Boko magala minneapolis.
This election means, this election means this is a moment for unity, where the entire Somali community can come together and say, this is our people, this is our city, we are united behind each other.
What? That's in, hold on, let me check my notes. Minneapolis? Joining me now, Dustin Gregge, wonderful columnist with townhall.com. Hey, Dustin, I'm just confirming that is in Minneapolis, Minnesota, right?
That is correct. That is in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay. So this is where we are now in order to win the Democrat primary in a major American city, a formerly wonderful city, I should note, that you have to habla the lingo or what?
Yeah, it's quite fascinating how electoral politics have kind of happened in this country, let alone just in a small city here. Minneapolis is a relatively small city in terms of some of these other major populaces, but we also just happen to have the largest concentration of Somali immigrants in the entire country. I want to say something like 90% or 80% of all of them in the entire United States live in a 7-county metro of Minnesota, the Minneapolis, Twin Cities, St. Paul area. So, yeah, it's kind of come to that point where in order to win, in particular in Democrat primary, you have to really dig into a certain population, which I want to say is maybe 8% of this metro. But that small of a concentration, if you were able to actually get into that demographic and win over their votes, in particular, just really hammering down at a certain clan within that population and be able to turn out their vote, because you can, one, speak the language, and two, target these individuals because whatever reason that it might benefit them, that you can actually go win a mayoral election.
Okay, Dustin, before we go on, I need you to go ahead and explain what you just said. A clan? We have now clan wars? What?
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. And I've been talking about this since, I don't know, probably 2018 now. There have actually been 4 Somali candidates that have run since that time in the state of Minnesota as Republicans. All 4 of those candidates have requested I run their campaigns because I actually am quite in depth with the Somali community here in Minnesota. Not as much as was before in Minneapolis. There's actually another neighboring area by St. Cloud, Minnesota. It's in the central part of the state. That's where I went to college at St. Cloud State University, and where I ultimately got my start with the Somali community. A lot of the elders, when they came over here after the Siad Barre regime, which is socialism, borderline communism, they like all the things that kind of come from Russia and Hitler and all these different they're terrible ideologies, but they brought that over here, and a lot of the individuals that actually ended up translating those tongues to word are from the St. Cloud community where I went to college. So I got into these communities a little bit already. I've known a lot of their business leaders that are more on the conservative side of things, and we've worked in small parts to try to bring more of those over to our side because they are here legally, unfortunately. You know, it's just part of those roadblocks you have to kind of come apart to try to take away votes from the Democrats. But yeah, when you're talking about a Democrat primary, it just brings it to a completely different level in which you have to try to go get those votes. And in this case, Mayor Fry almost speaks better Somali than Omar Fattah, which is kind of funny when you talk to some of those Somali activists, and you know, it's paid off for him.
Okay, Dustin, I'm sorry, but I just can't get over this. Exactly how did we end up with so many Somalis that we have clan wars to get elected mayor in Minneapolis? What is the history of this? I know you're boned up on this stuff.
Yeah. So you'd actually have to go back to Siad Barre, the former ruler of Somalia, way back in the day. That was in the early 1990s. And yeah, the war has kind of just kind of come over here. Somaliland, which is actually a country north of Somalia, this is when Siad Barre was actually basically committing genocide with between these two countries, trying to basically have a regime up there. And a lot of people are starting to finally click onto this, but one of Siad Barre's main colonels in his army was actually the father of Ilhan Omar. So she's actually a big part of this entire process and why, you know, kind of why socialism has kind of come over. Well, her dad was under a socialist regime, and she's kind of carried those politics over here, which is why she probably doesn't mind as much going back, because she'd be going back into socialism again. She's actually a part of a minority clan here in Minneapolis. Granted, they hold most of the power in the Minneapolis area, whether it be political acumen, having insider ways about getting donors, political organizers, people who know how the politics actually work in Minneapolis to get elected, because the three main Somali individuals who are elected to political office are all a part of that clan, the clan that holds the power. But Mayor Fry isn't a dumb guy. He realizes that these clan wars are occurring, and they actually are part of the minority clan. So, hey, what if I go over to these majority clans, get in with them, and actually try to vie for their vote? We can actually outnumber and end up coming down to basically the margin of victory. We're only talking about 8% of the Minneapolis community. It's not that much, but it can play a major role if you know how to actually get into those communities and vie for their vote. And he decided to go after the majority clan in those clan wars that have gone all the way back to genocide in the early 1990s with Somalia. But at the end of the day, a lot of people don't realize that the Somali community have some conservative roots to them. And in this case, they care about family and not aborting their children. So as these new generations come along, they're going to reproduce. And that's a major reality that we're facing here in Minnesota. So you do have to vie for their vote. And especially if you have a majority chunk of those clans from those clan wars, you can win some elections, not just now, but 2, 4, 6, 8 years from now as they become voting age.
Good. Dustin, thank you. That was illuminating. Thank you. We have Somali clan wars in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I need some chips. It makes me feel better. Look, I'm not proud of what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it. I'm a comfort eater. When I'm down or maybe stressed out about something, I'm going to snack. Now, it's normally a dangerous thing when I go wandering into the pantry. But now I have a big old box of Massa chips in there. They send me big boxes of them, not to brag. But they have all kinds of different flavors, right? And normally, if I come out of the pantry with a bag of chips, Ob is going to be giving me the side eye. Not with Massa chips. I grab a bag of Massa chips, pop open the fridge, grab a little thing of hot sauce, and I just go sit down in my chair, little dab, and I munch guilt-free. Three ingredients. No seed oil filth, none of this cancer-causing garbage. You're not going to feel fat and bloated afterwards, and you don't have to feel bad. They're delicious, and they're nutritious. MassaChips.com/JesseTV gets you a big discount. We'll be back. All right, well, there's very clearly a shift that's happening now, and you're going to see it happening in the coming days, a shift from the Trump administration focusing on a lot of foreign affairs, which they've been, you know, Ukraine and trade deals and things like that, to domestic. They have heard the domestic displeasure with the economy, and it seems like they're going to focus on that. Joining me now, Carol Roth, two-time best-selling author, recovering former investment banker. Okay, Carol, the administration is going to focus domestically. Some of that might be good, some of that might be bad. What kind of things are they tossing out there? What is this, dividend? What?
Well, first of all, I've got three letters for you. TYS, told you so. I knew this was going to be happen. We talked about the choreography of focusing on affordability, because that is the reason that President Trump was put into office. It was the number one thing that people were concerned about. So I give the administration props for now, you know, starting to home in on this. The challenge is that some of the ideas that are coming out are a little nutty, so we're going to need to work through them and hopefully twist it and change things around. On the tariff front, we know that the tariffs are in front of the Supreme Court right now, and I think to try to drum up more support on the president's side, he is now throwing out the idea of stimulus checks, basically $2,000 tariff rebates, whatnot. Although Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, has walked that back. They're floating ideas like 50-year mortgages to keep you indebted to the bank forever. I mean, might as well at this point have $200 mortgages and just keep it in the family for a few generations. So some of these ideas are a little wacky. But, we want to be positive, we want to be optimistic, and we want to be problem solvers. So we want to say, hey, here are the ways we can approach these things you're talking about and make them better. On the tariff front, I think the biggest gift that SCOTUS could give the president is by striking down the tariffs, but also making them basically proactive but not reactive in terms of their non-application. Refunding is going to be a big issue, even though it's money that they shouldn't have gotten, and a lot of people will want that back from a purely gift to the president standpoint, saying we're drawing a line on the stand. It will be a boon to the market, it'll be a boon to the economy, and if the president is able to let that go and refocus, then he can start focusing on some of the different options for affordability in lots of different categories.
Okay, we'll come back to the affordability thing. I want you to expand a little bit on how does this help us if the Supreme Court strikes down some tariff stuff? How does this translate into things being more affordable for normal people?
Well, the tariffs are a tax. You can call it a licensing fee, you can call it an extra fee, but ultimately it's extra money that is paid by businesses and then ultimately consumers that's going to the government. So in my world, that is a tax, and having more taxes is a bad thing, which I think most of us can agree to. So if we can get rid of the tariffs, if we can say, that is not in an emergency power, that it doesn't match up with emergency powers, these tariffs that he is undertaking, then I think that it's a good thing, because people won't have that extra cost. Businesses will have more certainty. The market will have more certainty on policy, and it will allow the Trump administration, instead of focusing on this relentlessly, to focus in other areas which are desperately needed. So I think that's going to be a benefit all around. Now, certainly, even if they strike them down, he could just, dig in, and he could take his proposals to Congress and try to get them to put those into law. But if that path opens up, if the Supreme Court offers the gift, I hope somebody says, please take the gift.
Okay, let's focus on affordability here. And I understand that we have decades and decades and decades of idiotic fiscal policy that has made us, it's made housing unaffordable. We'll just focus on that portion of it. And right. So look, if you're a populist president, you can throw out ideas like 50-year mortgage all you want, much as I hate that idea. It doesn't fix any of the foundational problems. Do you sense the administration is at all focused on the foundational problems that make life unaffordable for younger people?
I hope so. I think that when many of us spoke out and said, you know, 50-year mortgages doesn't fix the affordability issue, it's just basically monetizing it. You know, I think that some of the people involved in the administration picked up on other ideas that have been floated. I've floated ideas. I think I've talked to you about some of them before, like making mortgages assumable and portable. And so some folks in the administration have said that they are considering that as well. So that gives me at least a moment of optimism to say, okay, this is not the only thing that they're going to consider, and this is the first trial balloon that they're floating. I think that one's sort of gone over more like a lead balloon, but hopefully they will get involved in some of the things that they can. There are certain things that they won't be able to get directly involved, you know, things like zoning issues at the local level, but by the president using his platform to shine a light on them, I do think he can create that kind of pressure and then help people sort of double down on that pressure to do what needs to be done at the local and state level while he's doing the things he can do at the federal level.
Carol, what do we think about this meatpacking collusion? What did he call it? Illicit collusion and price fixing. This is something the Trump administration has spoken out about. I understand there is a beef shortage in the country. Anyone who's tried to buy a T-bone at the grocery store is well aware that there is a beef shortage of some kind in the country. What is going on?
Yes, well, obviously, I am not a rancher and I don't even play one in a great drama on television, but obviously there are issues. And, you know, it's interesting how politicians, you know, even the president, tend to go to big bad corporations and collusion and price fixing. And if that's happening, they should absolutely stop that. But where they never go, where I think they should go, is the deregulation and helping the smaller players in the industry. I've heard from many people, you know, whether it's related to ranching or farming, that there are restrictions that make it harder for them to do business. And we should be making it as easy as possible for them to do business and to feed the country. And so going back to one of the tenets that they ran on, the deregulation, the focus on Main Street America, on our ranchers, on our farmers, yes, we want to get rid of collusion with the big guys, but we want to make it easier for the small guys to compete. And that is something that they should be focused on highly.
Now, Carol, as we wrap this up here, the Trump administration, at least the first time, they were pretty daggone good about deregulation. That is something Trump does very, very well. He's big on that. Are they not focusing on that as much this time?
I think they got distracted. I think it should have been the first thing that they focused on out of the gate, as well as the making the tax code permanent. They obviously got the latter piece of that done, but the tariff policy and shoring some of that up, which some part of that has actually been great. So let me give the president props. You know, things like focusing on rare earth elements and securing our border and national security, like some of those things are really good and we're really glad he did it. But I do think the focus on tariff and some of the international trade didn't give them as much time to focus on Main Street. You know, even something like we've talked about the Corporate Transparency Act, they haven't even come out with the final rule yet. So that hasn't been codified. So they've taken some steps in that direction, but they need to do massive deregulation, particularly as it pertains to the things that create barriers for small businesses in this country. We want this country to grow and to thrive. It benefits everyone. And that starts with the backbone of the economy. So deregulation and helping out the little guys in a very pro free market way makes all the sense in the world.
Carol, I'm so glad you're with us and you're not an investment banker anymore. Come back soon. We have Light in the Mood. It's time for a very special happy birthday. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood, and to lighten the mood today, we are going to wish a happy birthday. A happy birthday to the most wonderful organization on the planet. Today is the 250th anniversary of my beloved United States Marine Corps. I only dedicated 4 years of my life to this wonderful institution. So many others dedicated so much more, but I am very, very proud to be a very teeny tiny part of the history of an organization that has been fighting for this country and fighting in bars for now 250 years. Thank you to the finest light infantry on the planet. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.